Welcome to Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls. Now, sometimes we ask ourselves if the natural level of day-to-day activities and the common understanding of problems is enough to bring us happiness. Well, we know the answer is that it isn't. So, in Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls, we bring the transcending beauty of the Catholic faith and mix it judiciously with key principles of psychology so we are better equipped to become the people that Christ wants us to be. Welcome to the program. Our topic today is a great one: forgiveness, the only remedy. And our special guest is Dr. Patrick DeViatri. Welcome back to the show, Dr. DeViatri.
Oh, Art, how are you?
Beautiful. Let me tell the folks a little bit about you. You have a doctorate in humanities and a clinical degree in family counseling and psychology. Dr. DeViatri is the executive director of the Family Life Institute in Manassas, Virginia. He has a diplomat in family counseling from the University of Navarre in Pamplona, Spain. Over 25 years of clinical experience. He was also the Associate Director of Family Life in the office in Peoria, Illinois, author of 11 books, and has taught conferences at the Vatican on globalization and bioethics. Dr. DeViatri, you've been everywhere here. And with all that vast experience, you're coming into one of the topics that is most critical. In fact, you say it's the only remedy to the problems that surround us. So why don't we talk a little bit about forgiveness and the role it plays in our lives?
Well, forgiveness is probably one of the most commonly needed virtues in our culture, because if you think about how often you see anger, it's pretty frequent. And in marriage, in family life, and in any interpersonal relationship, forgiveness is needed because the person that we're dealing with, or the person we care for, or the person that maybe we work with is going to let us down or offend us in some way. So there's always a need for forgiveness, which is really the pardoning or the remission of an offense. We don't hold this offense against the other person.
So life will give us plenty of opportunities to exercise or ignore this virtue, huh?
Yes, very much so, because it's like a debt. We have these expectations of ourselves, and also there's what is just. When we think about justice, it's what's due to a person. And so when that is slighted, when that's not given, there is a sense of offense. And it's very, very difficult in a society or in the human condition to always be just, to always give to each person what is due. Plus, you combine that with the effects of original sin, and you have what people think is due versus what is truly due to them. And so there's all these opportunities for someone to be slighted in some way, and that's why people become angry, because they're treated with some sort of slight or some sort of contempt. And so the passion is to seek revenge. And the only remedy for that is to forgive the other person.
So the only way to kind of get out of the cycle of the world treats me unjustly, and it really is not hard to find acts of injustice, particularly instances where people haven't given us the respect that we're really due. If one's looking for that, one can find that readily any time.
No, yes, it's very much so. This is the whole idea of human dignity. And is a person treated with human dignity? If you ask yourself, how did I feel when I was angry with someone? How did I feel I was treated? You always have a sense that I was treated like, and it's always going to be something less than we feel that we deserve. And so the whole idea of an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, is this desire to hurt someone or the desire to get revenge, this desire to get some sort of justice. And that's why people think things over and over in their mind. They're hoping to get some sort of justice from this other person. They tell the person them off, or they say these things. But they're looking for justice. They're looking for this acknowledgement and this consideration. And as much as we try to do these different things and we get an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, we don't really heal and we don't really remedy the anger. The only remedy is to forgive it. And the only way to do that is through humility and through some sort of act of our will that the person doesn't really deserve, but we give to them.
So this isn't we really can't get to a point of forgiveness just by looking at the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, kind of balancing the scales model. We have to look at something else. I guess it's the person of Christ. I keep thinking, wasn't it Peter in the Gospel of Matthew that asked, by the way, Lord, how many times do I have to forgive somebody? And that's where he says 70 times 7, which is basically he doesn't want us just to be very forgiving. He wants us to be essentially forgiving, I gather.
Well, he's pointing to the difficulty of forgiveness as well. See, this whole thing, eye for an eye, was pre-messianic. Jesus Christ was all about forgiveness. The Jews couldn't forgive except through that one ceremony each year. But the whole difficulty is in forgiving someone. And so when you say 70 times 7, we think, well, we get to nail somebody, you know, 490 times, and they got to forgive us each time. But we can think about a different question, and we can see where this phrase from Scripture helps us. We can ask ourselves a question, and that is, if you forgive someone and then later think about what they did wrong to you or how they harmed you and you become angry, did you truly forgive them? And that's a question that people usually answer in the negative. They say, no, we didn't. But if we look at what the nature of forgiveness is all about and the nature of anger, we understand that a memory is what is causing this the pain. And so whenever I remember this painful experience, I will suffer and I will be able to become angry again. So even though I forgive someone, that memory can return over and over and over again and injure me. And so it's necessary that same memory can come 490 times to dismiss it. And I think that parable or that phrase from Scripture helps us understand even one memory needs to be put aside and set aside because it can return to harm someone.
So many times when we have mental health problems, we have this sense that something's out of my control. I can't help but being angry. I can't help but obsessing on something. Is forgiveness a way of overcoming the tyranny of feelings and emotions that sometimes feel like they're just taking over our lives?
It's the only way. You point out a perfect example. We can have these memories of experiences of people who are long gone that injured us. Maybe there was an abuse in our childhood. There was some sort of treatment. There's no way that you can truly get the satisfaction for these feelings from wreaking some havoc on another person. That's not going to really do that. And you're not going to get necessarily this fulfillment in the world from another person. However, you can forgive them. And forgiveness fulfills justice. It doesn't abolish it. It fulfills it. There is this act on our part that we relinquish this debt that this person owes us. And that's what frees a person.
You're listening to Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls. We're discussing forgiveness, the only remedy, with Dr. Patrick DeVietri. I'm your host, Art Bennett. We'll return in a moment. Welcome back to Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls. Our topic today, forgiveness, the only remedy. Our special guest, Dr. Patrick DeVietri. Now, Dr. DeVietri, you were telling us that while forgiveness is critical, it's oftentimes very difficult. Can you give us some practical aspects? Maybe I want to be forgiving, but I'm having a hard time figuring out how to do it.
And that's very common. And it's common because of the way that an injury can take place. We can have situations when you think about anger, we're thinking about a memory that's related to an insult. And this injury can take place three different ways. Like a person can be ignorant about injuring you. So I could say something to you. I could say to my wife, gee, that's not quite right, what you're saying to me. And I could correct her, and she could be injured by that. But what's going on, perhaps, is that when she was growing up, maybe her family criticized her in this way and had an implication about her knowledge or education that was insulting, which I don't mean. So I'm ignorant of what's going on, but then I find out this is what's happening to her. So I didn't mean to hurt her, I didn't intend any injury, and I'm ignorant of what's happening with her. Now, another situation is the exact opposite, and that is where somebody chooses. They say, I want to hurt you. I truly want to destroy you, and I'm going to do this injurious thing to you. And we listen to this, and this is really an offensive idea. It's really like pathological. To choose to injure another person is not something that we can really tolerate. Then in between, another way that the injury can take place is in passion, so that you and I are talking about the Detroit Red Wings, and you say something insulting, and I get mad, and I just call you a big boob or some sort of thing. I insult you. Well, what I'm doing is I'm saying something where I want to injure you with this insult, but you will kind of excuse me to some degree because you say, well, he said that in anger.
Mm-hmm.
So we can see that if somebody does something and they're ignorant, it's easy to forgive that. We can also see if somebody does this by pure, clear, rational choice without any passion, it's very difficult to forgive that. And then the one in the middle is the one that, you know, somebody's angry, and we can kind of excuse the person doing it because they're angry. However, we don't excuse it as easily as say, ignorance, because the person is choosing to injure us, and this can go on. So this is one of the most difficult things, is that how someone injures us will affect how easy it is to forgive them, so and also whether or not they actually acknowledge it. Because if a person says, well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that, I truly, you know, didn't mean to insult you, please forgive me, they humble themselves and it makes it easier for the person to forgive. But what happens in the case of somebody who doesn't ask for forgiveness? How difficult is it to forgive someone who doesn't want to be forgiven?
So the intentionality of the person who causes us to be in this situation that causes us to need forgive, to need to move on, knowing the intention of the other person is very important.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like there's quite a difference between just saying, I'll endure this, I'll put up with you, I'll ignore you, kind of a stoical response. And true forgiveness merely means that we really remove the anger and the vituperativeness in our heart.
Well, it has to do with the memory. The anger is related to the memory. If we think about this memory, and that's why we think of this process when people are stewing over something, it brings a certain pleasure to our mind because we hope we can get revenge, and revenge is present in our imagination, but that dissipates a person. So what we have with anger is we're looking at this memory. Forgiveness means I dismiss this. I put this memory out of my mind, or I turn my attention someplace else. The memory will diminish in time, naturally. However, you know, like a bitter person will draw this memory back. They don't let the memory go. And this is where you say to a guy, hey, let go of it. Don't worry about it anymore. You know, stop thinking about this. So what happens is that with forgiveness, we're taking this memory that makes us angry, and we're putting it out of our consciousness. We're setting it aside. We're still going to feel something for a while until we can turn our attention and focus and no longer think about the memory. If we're not looking at the memory, we're not angry.
Can the forgiveness also transform the memory? Let's say we have a memory that does keep coming back, but mm-hmm. as we start to identify, well, that person was young or that person was ignorant and mm-hmm. that person is today changed and not the person they used to be,
mm-hmm.
do all these qualities kind of help diffuse the mm-hmm. forcefulness of the memory, and even though the memory may still be recurring, it's almost like a picture with a different frame.
Right, and that's where you're talking about understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So that you're understanding the other person, and it is mitigating their offense. It's shame. While they were young, they didn't really intend. It's just like young people. Teenagers and children have a form of anger that's called despiteful treatment. What despiteful treatment is, you're preventing one person from doing their will. And that's what teenagers think you're doing all the time. So they get angry, you see? So it's in the parents' understanding that this child of theirs is a teenager and they're just acting this out in their immaturity, it helps them to forgive them and to be patient with them, at the same time correct them. So, you know, forgiving someone doesn't mean that you don't deal with justice. You see, it means that you don't hold the debt against them, but you still might need to take some action. There may still need something that has to be done. However, you don't hold this debt against them. You don't harbor this grief against them.
So what you're talking about here then is a model or an approach where we can really let go of the power these, let's say, damning or hurtful instances have over us, so we can go on with our lives and be more forgiving and loving. But it's interesting in the model you're presenting. It's not just looking inside of myself and letting go. I need to look with more love at other people. That is, forgiveness isn't just kind of self-absorption on my part, though I have to start with myself, but I'm really going to look at whether it be a perpetrator or the person that caused me to be so angry. I'm going to really consciously try to look at them differently, probably look at them as a child of God. Huh?
Yes, that's exactly what, you know, Christ was all about. Essentially, and what we're trying to do this is bring this about in a practical way, that you have compassion. It's just like little ones. We find that oftentimes parents lose sight of the fact that they're children, and society has trouble supporting them because they don't really like the children that much. But the whole idea, we expect these children to be really sophisticated. If you look at all the kids on television and movies, they're all real sophisticated, so we expect these little ones to be acting like adults. Well, they're acting like children. They don't do these things intentionally. They're acting immaturely. And so understanding that helps the parents to become patient with them and forgiving. It doesn't mean that there isn't a place for, say, a righteous anger on the part of parents, but it has to be controlled by reason. So when they're correcting their children...
Thank you, Dr. DiViatri. You've been listening to Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls. Our guest, Dr. Patrick DiViatri. Please join us again next time. Welcome back to Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls. Our topic today, forgiveness, the only remedy. Our guest, Dr. Patrick DiViatri. Dr. DiViatri, what about the situation? This seems very common, where the person's the same old memories, the same hurts just keep coming up over and over and over again and nearly paralyze a marriage and paralyze relationships. Can this model help with those kind of things?
Yes, because this is a common dynamic. And one of the modern approaches has been... Listen, fight fair, don't bring up the past. And guys oftentimes are trying to get their wives, don't bring up the past. And it doesn't work. And one of the reasons it doesn't work is the past is important. And let me explain why. What happens is that someone injures someone and there's a certain insult. So I'm supposed to be home at 6 o'clock for dinner and it's going to be a special night, et cetera, et cetera. And my wife cooks this dinner. And then it's waiting for me at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, I'm not there, 10 o'clock, I walk in, and she's angry with me. And I say, oh, my gosh, I'm sorry, I forgot. I didn't realize it was tonight. I thought it was next week. So I'm pleading ignorance, and she forgives me. And so that's fine. You know, she's a good woman. She's forgiven me. And so we've got something else set up. 2 weeks later, I'm supposed to be there at 8:30, and I walk in at 10 o'clock again. What happens the second time is that she's angry because I've not called her, I've not told her, and she's remembering, she's saying, hey, you know, he did this a couple weeks ago. It's the same kind of injury. So what happens with the second injury, it brings to mind other injuries that are like that. And this can keep happening. So you can see that, you know, say the fourth week something else happens, something else happens. And so each time my wife is saying, if you understand it hurts me, when you don't call, when you don't come in, you see, you need to understand. I said, well, I understand. And after a while, you get like, you know, say 8 or 9 of these events. And so then I walk in at 11 o'clock at night, and she says, if you understood that it hurt me when you did this, when you didn't call, you didn't come home, why do you keep doing it? It can't be because of ignorance. It must be because you want to hurt me. And that's why she would be so very angry with me, because the anger is related to a repeated habit of disregarding her. And what happens is this keeps going on, and so that when a new offense takes place, all these other memories are attached to it. And that's why the anger is so disproportionate to the moment. And so the forgiveness has to do with dismissing this, but also the other person has to understand what they're doing and why this person is hurt so. It's because they're not changing their behavior. So it's where a situation in marriage that both people have to do something. The person has to forgive, the other person has to change. And what can happen with problem marriages, we have what we call a saturation of memories. And that is a situation where a person can only remember the bad things someone's done and very few good things.
So it's almost like the problems eclipse any of the good things. So in this model you're talking about, then, it's not enough just to have the insight of change. A person needs to see demonstrable efforts at changing the behavior.
Right, exactly. You have to do this for the sake of love, because it makes it more and more difficult to love someone and to forgive them if they constantly are injuring you. And so at some point, there has to be some sort of line drawn and say, look, if you want to injure me, keep doing what you're doing, because you're doing a good job with this. But if you love me and if you really care about me, you need to pay attention to what you're doing and stop doing these things. And that's where, when things get to this point and someone doesn't want to change, then, or they're having difficulty changing, that's where they need to seek professional help or seek counsel, or seek counsel from a priest or a friend, where they start to make a conscious effort to change their behavior so as to make it easier for the other person to forgive them. And so that, you know, the person can talk these things through, but both people have to understand the responsibilities they share. One person has to forgive, but the other person has to pay attention to what they're doing and change their behavior so as to make the love for them sincerely seen by the other person.
Maybe perhaps an appropriate area to look at our behavior and how we're acting is the nightly examination of conscience. Maybe sometimes we associate it with just kind of going through a list of sins or virtuous acts, but maybe if we're working on this in our marriage, if this is an issue in our marriage, maybe we want to kind of take a profile of, all right, where have I made it easier for my wife to see that I love her, and where have I fallen short of showing her the love and dignity that she deserves?
Oh, exactly. I think that is a tremendously valuable practice to do that daily. And I think another thing that I have recommended for 20 years with men who are Catholic, women who are Catholic, is the frequency of the sacrament of confession, of penance, especially in dealing with anger or forgiveness. I'll advise them to go weekly, because it's not so much for their sins as much as, I mean, obviously that's what it does, but it's to heal the wounds that are inside that they may not even talk about. And it makes it easier for them to control their temper, and it also makes it easier for them to forgive.
So looking at the way we treat our spouses, our contributions to both making the marriage better or our contributions to aggravating the situation, not only having insight on that and a commitment to change, but being open to a sacramental view of this, which you've talked about in other programs as well, which is, let's let Christ's grace come in here and help us get unstuck on what appears to be an unsolvable problem.
Right, but, and it's very important when you get a saturation of memories or something that seems hopeless is to try to build some good memories. I'll tell a couple, don't talk, because you're just going to argue again. Go out and do some things. Do some nice things together. Spend some time together. Build some good memories, and then talk. Maybe you need help to talk. Maybe you need to see someone so that you talk through some of your difficulties in a respectful and civil manner. I think that's the main quality is, whatever you need to say it in with respect, to work through these things with respect. And sometimes, you know, if you get angry, you really got to just, I believe in walking away, writing the things down, come back when you're reasonable. But it really doesn't help to just go toe-to-toe and just create more and more difficulties and more problems and injuries that make it more difficult for each person to forgive one another.
We've been listening to Dr. Patrick DeViatri talk about forgiveness, the only remedy. And I think if we're feeling stuck, we're feeling we're not making progress in our personal life or in our marriage and relationships, Dr. DeViatri is pointing us where we need to look at the notion of forgiveness. Dr. DeViatri, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
It's been our pleasure indeed. I want to thank everybody for joining us on Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls. If you'd like more information on the Alpha Omega Clinic and consulting services or this program, give us a call at 571-216-9651. On behalf of our engineer, Stephen Grunner, and myself, thank you very much for joining us. Bye-bye.